Soulful tunes of. So we're back with Joss. So yeah, we're talking about CCS and the whole kind of hullapalooza that they're kind of bringing out with the King's North thing. I mean, just wondering why they're kind of investing so much time and effort in promoting a technology that, you know, doesn't exist and probably won't work. I mean, what's the logic behind it if they could just invest that energy in kind of develop new renewables or something better?
Well, I think in terms of why we hear about it so much. I think in terms of why we hear about carbon capture so much, it's because the public would find it a lot less acceptable if there wasn't some kind of like solution that maybe was going to happen in a couple of years. And the fact that they can go out there and say this is going to be the first in a whole new generation of cleaner coal plants, when actually that's not true. You know, it's basically a greenwash strategy. It's a PR strategy. And there are people who are genuinely into carbon capture, who do think that it will make a significant contribution towards reducing emissions. But those tend not to be the same people who are... They tend not to be E.ON, for example. I mean, E.ON makes massive, massive profits, like millions and millions of pounds, but it doesn't put it into carbon capture and storage. And in fact, they're at the moment trying to get public money, taxpayers' money, to put into this technology so that they can fix it onto new plants like King's North that we don't even need. So, yeah, I think it's more about PR and public acceptability than anything.
But why wouldn't E.ON just go for, like, renewables if they were going to get all this public money and that they have their own profits on that? I mean,
well, I think it's partly because well, as usual, it comes down to the government, and the government's put in place an economic framework that's stacked in favour of the highest carbon options like coal. So at the moment, coal is the cheapest thing that you can build, and one of the reasons why we're seeing this, not just resurgence in coal in Britain but globally, you know, in America, and this is quite inspiring actually, in America there's been 151 coal plant applications in the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. 64 of them have been blocked by environmental campaigners. And there's a kind of climate action in America this summer targeting coal as well.
Yeah.
Totally lost my track. But in terms of what E.ON's doing in other countries, like in Denmark, for example, it is investing in renewable energy. Yes, that's what I was going to say. The global resurgence in coal is largely because the oil and gas prices have gone through the roof. And mm-hmm. so suddenly coal, which wasn't such an attractive option before, looks more and more attractive. Mm-hmm. And then you think, well, why doesn't the government just fix it so that renewables is going to, you know, be cheaper, because surely it is cheaper, because once it's in place you don't have to carry on paying for it, because it's just whenever the wind blows, you know. And so you have much higher kind of upfront costs to build the wind turbines and the solar panels and all the rest of it, but then after that it's going to be a lot cheaper. But that obviously doesn't help the fossil fuel industry, who have huge vested interests mm-hmm. in keeping the coal industry running, not just in Britain but all around the world. And so I think it comes down to partly vested interest on the part of E.ON, but also on the part of the government. They're not putting in place the kind of support strategies for renewables mm-hmm. and the clean options. And they're not providing, like in Germany, for example, they give a long-term fixed price guarantee of a premium price for renewable energy yeah. so that people want to invest in the clean options. Britain doesn't do that.
Hmm. Okay. And how about the social impact of closing coal-fired plants and things like that? I mean, Arthur Scargill was here today, and he's the, what is it?
He's in the NUM.
Yeah, the National Union Miners.
Mine Workers.
Yeah, and basically I assume that he was talking about the issue of taking away the jobs of people in the UK. And I mean, could those people be retasked in a renewable energy force? Like, for example, Germany has a huge...
Yeah, I mean, Germany has like a quarter of a million people employed in the renewable sector, and it's done that in just a few years. And really, I mean, on the one hand, yes, people employed in the coal industry in Britain will potentially lose their jobs, but their jobs are fundamentally unsustainable because we can't carry on using fossil fuels. And so really, we need the government to set up training programs for people to switch over to renewable schemes, so that we create the sort of worker skill base for renewables that we're going to need anyway to meet our renewables targets and to get renewables off the ground in Britain. So, you know, there is huge potential for green collar jobs and green industries. And Germany, for example, has a massive export market for offshore wind, for wind components, and they sell to markets all over the world, you know, and they've got loads and loads of jobs in the renewable sector. And Britain has a pathetic number of jobs, like 2,000 or 3,000 jobs in the whole of Britain, compared with 250,000 jobs in Germany. And so that's what needs to change, really. And just desperately hoping that these unsustainable jobs can stick around isn't a very progressive way to approach it. And also, it doesn't take into account the social impacts of the coal industry in other parts of the world. I mean, what about the 9-year-olds who work down coal mines in South Africa? You know, what about the mines in Colombia? You know, Britain gets a lot of its coal from Putin's Russia, notoriously authoritarian, and Colombia, where paramilitaries run the mines, you know. And the social implications of the coal industry are far greater than losing a relatively small number of jobs in Britain.
Interesting. So I guess we're going to wrap up then. But thanks so much for coming in and talking to us about it. And I guess we'll have John come on. John is from the Oxford and Thames Valley neighborhood. And welcome, John.
Hello. Thank you.
I'm a Camp Radio.
Yeah. So how long have you been here?
About an hour.
Cool. How is it so far?
Yeah, pretty amazing. The site is awesome. Compared to last year, this is such a beautiful location, and it's nice, and it's on a hill, and you can see King's North from here. It's great.
Oh, cool. And how's the Oxford camp treating you, the Oxford barrio?
Well, I just got back from having dinner, and that was really nice.
How's the food?
The food was pretty good. I'm not sure what it was. there was some potatoes and some pasta in it, but it was tasty. It was very tasty.
Yummy, yummy. So you've been involved in actions back where you're from. I assume that's Oxford or Thames Valley roundabouts. You don't have to tell us exactly where, of course.
I'm from Oxford. I was involved in an action on the 16th of August. I wasn't actually in Oxford, but it was with people not only from Oxford, but mostly from Oxford. It was kind of planned in Oxford. And that was against a company called Edelman PR. We went up to their London office. Edelman are the PR company that E.ON contracted as soon as they found out that the climate camp was going to come and pitch up next door to them. And so we were aiming to highlight their greenwash strategies, and basically highlight how PR companies have a role to play in manipulating the public into thinking that companies like E.ON are actually doing something about climate change when they're not.
And what did the action entail? What did you guys do?
there were four of us that were... five of us that were taking, in a sense, arrestable roles. And that was myself and two others who climbed onto the roof. There was basically a kind of glass and metal awning in front of the office. It was actually on Victoria Street, so right in the heart of London. So we climbed on top of the awning, and we had a massive banner that said, Edelman PR, spinning the climate out of control, which I thought was quite catchy. And so, yeah, we got up there about 9:30 in the morning and stayed until about 12:15. And two others also went into the office. They went in dressed in suits, somehow managed to get through and open. It was actually, I mean, it was a reasonably secure office, but they managed to get in a back door and look bit inconspicuous. And they got into the lifts and changed into boiler suits and with like masks and stuff, and went up to the third floor, which is where Edelman's office is, and went in there and started telling the employees how there was high levels of toxic greenwash being detected in the building.
That's
and generally causing disturbance, and you know, highlighting their concerns with the company.
And how was that received for the people in the office?
I wasn't in the building, but I understand that some of them thought it was quite funny. Some of them, I understand that when they first went in, they were asking everyone to leave in case they were kind of taken ill by the toxic greenwash that was in the building. And I think some people didn't really know whether to take it seriously or not. But they were fairly quickly kind of bustled out. So they made their mark and got taken out of the building. The police were there within minutes, and so they were arrested quite shortly after they went in the building, I think. And then it was just us on the roof.
Okay, that's fun. And how long did you stay there for?
So yeah, as I say, we stayed there. We got up there at 9:30, and we stayed there till about 12:15. We ended up coming down by negotiating with the superintendent who was dealing with the situation, and we negotiated to not get arrested in exchange for agreeing to come down at that time.
Okay.
So that was quite a good thing for us.
Yeah.
We did in the end get all three of us, well, all five of us got fixed penalty notices under Section 5 of the Public Order Act, which is for causing harassment, alarm and distress. So we all got £80 fines. And myself and one other person are going to send ours off tomorrow, actually, because the deadline's on Wednesday. Or maybe tonight. But we're going to send it off and ask for a court hearing, because we don't actually feel that that's a fair allegation. And so we're going to see how that goes.
Oh, well, good stuff. Well, maybe we can put on a track now.
Yeah. In a minute.
In a second.
Yeah.
we gotta find some friendly music for all our listeners out there.
Oh, like four of them or whatever.
And we're back. For some reason, our music died on us. Power issues, which are completely understandable, you know? I mean, it's amazing all this stuff is actually working here on the camp. I mean, all the power that we're getting to do all this radio stuff, it's awesome. So hopefully we can get more people listening, too, both here at the camp and online. Yeah, but John is still here from Oxford and Thames Valley. And so how did you get involved with Climate Camp? Like, what brought you here?
Well, basically, I heard about the Climate Camp at Heathrow last summer through my sister, just through a kind of random conversation. And I thought it sounded a bit interesting. And then I think I heard about it again for a different reason. And I just started getting on the website and getting on indie media and being curious about it.
Mm-hmm.
And that coincided with a time in my life when I was thinking a lot more about climate change and reading a lot more about it and starting to get quite concerned about it. So I was working that summer, and I wasn't able to go for the whole week, and I'm not sure I really wanted to either. But
you're glad you're here for the week this time,
totally,
aren't you?
Totally. Yeah, it's really exciting. So last summer I knew that the mass action was happening at the weekend,
mm-hmm.
and I thought I'd just go down and see what it's like.
Yeah.
And I went, and it was so inspiring, and I met really cool people, and just the feeling of empowerment that came from that was really struck me quite hard. And so I thought, this is something that I really want to be involved in, mm-hmm. and continue to do.
And so what are some of the things that you're looking forward to doing while you're here? Anything particular?
Shutting down King's North would be quite good.
Yeah.
Pretty looking forward to
number
that.
Number one, maybe.
Apart from that, like going to the workshops, that should be really interesting. I haven't looked through the workshop program yet.
It's quite comprehensive,
but I know there's some really interesting things coming up, so yeah. I'm looking forward to going to them. Generally being involved in the camp life, mm-hmm. maybe learning some new skills, that would be quite good. I haven't exactly thought. I'm quite keen on photography, so I'm hoping to get involved in doing some photography as well. So
cool. Well, thanks for coming on.
No problem.
And hopefully we'll see you around. And
okay.
Good luck with the rest of your climate camp experience.
Thank you.
Okay. And so we're going to be talking now about food. Totally. Next time. I'm there. You know where to find me.
Tomorrow.
So, what you have for dinner tonight?
So tonight, I'm gonna do some reviews. Basically, was asked to do the food reviews for the Climate Camp, and we very willingly volunteered.
Very happy to eat lots of food and then talk about how much we enjoyed it. Yeah. That sounds fine to us. So last time we had central kitchen food, which was very nice. I can't remember it. I was so hungry I ate it before I looked. But it was great. And tonight I've been to Eastside, where I had a very fine chickpea and carrot curry with a little bit of very fluffy, not at all stodgy couscous.
Mm.
And some nice sort of carrot and beetroot coleslaw, no mayo coleslaw. Very, very lovely.
Okay. Ooh. So marks out of five?
Marks out of five. I'd say it's a very high four, if not a five, tonight. But maybe I should be harsh at the beginning, shouldn't I?
I should start off harsh,
otherwise they just think I'm easy to impress.
Yeah.
But it was good. I'd say a four.
Yeah, you want to keep them on their toes.
Yeah,
yeah, definitely. Where were you eating tonight?
Eastside.
Eastside.
So that'll be Eastside for a while. We've done Central, so maybe tomorrow we'll try London or, mm-hmm. or somewhere. We're really going to try and get the competition going.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Improve the standard of food all around.
Master Chef.
Not that it really needs improving. It's very high, but...
Awesome.
So you're also here to talk a little bit more about food in general.
Yeah, I mean, it's great that the food on camp is provided for people, that there are communal kitchens that are doing that. And one of the things that is worth talking about when we talk about food is that communal aspect of it, which is different to how most people in this country eat their food these days.
Mm-hmm.
They tend to eat it by themselves. And that's partly made it a much less joyful experience, which is really sad, but it's also, you know, in terms of energy, it's not so great. If you're communal cooking, you can save a lot of energy, and it's just nicer to eat your food with your friends and stuff. Who needs a TV when you can have a meal with your friends? So that's one little small thing. The other thing about the food on site, of course, is that it's all vegan, which is really important. Mm. And that's the main thing that I'd like to talk about.
Yeah.
So you have a laminated
I brought a little laminated so I get my statistics right. A couple of us in Bicycology got together and sorted out this laminate, which we've also got handouts of in our space, and we try and give them around out in foodie places.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been giving them out on the caravan when we've been providing a bit of food for the public there. And one side is based on an article which Simon Fairley just recently wrote in a magazine called The Land.
Mm-hmm.
And that's entitled Can Britain Feed Itself? And basically in this article he talks about a book that was written in 1975. Which had the same title, Can Britain Feed Itself? And in it, this guy, Kenneth Mellenby, worked out how to divide up the land of Britain to provide a really basic diet and feed everyone on the land that we have here.
Mm-hmm.
And he managed to do it then. And then it was just, he was just doing a chemical-based, livestock-based farming system.
Mm-hmm.
And he managed to provide a basic diet, a bit like the rationing that they had in the war, basically.
Yeah.
And so Simon Fairley's done it again, but he's done it so that... A, he can compare chemical and organic, so he can say whether organic farming can feed Britain, which is obviously important, but also comparing livestock farming against vegan farming,
mm-hmm.
and seeing whether that makes a difference, and also including a little bit of discussion about how much land a permaculture system would need.
Yeah. And so what else does the sheet say? Wow, it's got pictures and everything.
It's got pictures. So it compares the amount of land that each of these diets would need to feed people. I can't quite work out which is the best way to explain it. It's easier if you see it on the handout. We've got lovely little boxes which show a size of the amount of land that you need, a comparative size. Perhaps the best way is just go through them so we can compare. Chemical agriculture is obviously much more efficient in terms of land because you're pumping all these chemicals in.
Yeah.
But that's completely unsustainable. And in terms of energy, it's no more efficient because to create all those synthetic fertilizers and pesticides and herbicides, you need energy.
Yeah.
So it uses less land, but it's no good. We can't do that anymore. But for instance, a chemical vegan diet, if we had chemical farming and a vegan diet and all vegan farming all over the UK,
mm-hmm.
we could easily feed over 200 million people in the UK. So
wow.
that's way over the 60 million so we have now.
Mm-hmm.
And globally, if we had that kind of food system, we could feed easily 9 billion people. So in terms of the food crisis, we can solve that in
mm-hmm.
that way. It's not a way that I would advocate, and it's not a way that most people at this camp would advocate. But it's possible. The important thing really is the vegan aspect, because with livestock farming already, when that's chemical, you're only just about able to feed the population of the UK.
Mm-hmm.
There's a bit of breathing room. When you go up to organic livestock farming, Simon Fairley just about squeezes it into the land that we've got. He reckons that an organic livestock farming, two hectares of land will feed 7.5 people.
Mm-hmm.
So,
that's quite a bit of land, actually.
Yeah, if we compare that, for instance, to the organic vegan diet, 1 hectare, so half the area,
mm-hmm.
will feed 8 people, so a little bit more.
Yeah.
So basically, 4 times as many people
yeah.
from the same area of land.
Oh, cool. That's some interesting factoids we got there, huh?
factoids. So that was a bit of a contrast to the going on about the tastiness of the food.
Mm. Well, thanks so much for coming in and talking to us about the food and making us really hungry. But you're going to be coming in hopefully for the rest of the
week. It might not be
me.
Hopefully it's going to be a bit of variation. I've already been once
fun.
Today. Back
yeah,
in the lush have. Surroundings of Planet Camp Radio again.
Ooh,
but hopefully we'll have a variety of food reviews. We might even get a bit of a panel going.
Oh, fun. That would definitely
bit busy tonight.
Be fun.
We might even get some proper competition with a few different meals in here.
Yeah, we can get a few to go around to different kitchens. And
that's the idea.
Eat a lot.
Yeah. Idea. And I think we've got wiggly hands coming in the tent. Wow.
Okay.
And you know, then we can talk more about other issues to do with food as well, like
yeah.
animal farming and why that's also bad for other reasons than just land use.
Okay.
Cool. Well we're gonna go into a track now.
In a second, when the things work.
No, it's better than letting the air go dead, really.
The age of the baby boomer generation is over. They paid their dues, and now they gotta pay for their baby food. They screwed the environment, and realized it just in time for retirement. But private pensions ain't so inspiring. Some of them wonder how they're gonna get by when the government doesn't let anyone hire them. Benefits are better for teachers and firemen, but the rest ain't showing no teeth when they're smiling. Cause their kids' damn business plans is freestyling. Chilling on beaches on Tahitian islands, riding jet skis. Most MCs never gave a thought to RRSPs. So the pension, tension, everybody's inching. Closer to the edge of income suspension. There's a monkey wrench in this economic engine. Listen to the dentures mention. Feel the pension, tension, everybody's inching. Closer to the edge of income suspension. There's a monkey wrench in this economic engine. Listen to the dentures flinching. Leave us alone, leave us alone, leave us alone, leave us alone. We ain't got no savings, are you crazy? We got gold chains with bold engravings and credit cards with platinum ratings. The whole generation over aiming. 5-year plan, I don't really care, but somehow I'ma be a millionaire. I ain't aware of no chill in the air, cause my folks told me to feel no fear. I feel no fear. Feel the pension, tension, everybody's inching. Closer to the edge of income suspension. There's a monkey wrench in this economic engine. Listen to the dentures clenching. Engine.
Fools.
Yeah, I think we're back, are we? Yeah. So we're just going to basically do a repeat of the action reports that we broadcast in the early show for those of you who missed it. So yeah, here we go. It's 7:25 in the morning. Standing at the back entrance to the climate camp, there's a van. Loads of people standing on top of the roof inside. Riot cops. Dogs.
This van, which has caused all this problem, is not obstructing anything. It's not blocking anything. This van is not doing anything. So why all this fuss?
So I'm here with Legal Observer. What's going on?
Okay, as I understand it, the police started out by claiming that the vehicles across this gateway are abandoned vehicles, and they said they therefore need to move them for those reasons. People have been making it very clear that they're not abandoned vehicles, that their owners are here. The owner of one of those vehicles is now here and is trying to work out. The police are saying that that she has the option of moving it on the site, but when they're saying if she doesn't move it on the site, then they will take it away. When we're asking why will they take it away, they're giving no good reason, no reason at all, in fact. They just seem to want to set up a mobile base. They don't seem to have a valid legal reason for saying that they would move the vehicle. So I don't believe that they would be acting in any in the exercise of any lawful duty if they were to move that vehicle.
And so you're taking a lot of notes today. What's happening?
Well, the notes are for all sorts of reasons. Partly the record of the dialogue as to what the police are saying and their legal reasons for being here. Partly recording which police officers have been truncheoning people and throwing fists and sort of acting politically out of order. So we know which officers have been doing that, because there have been people hurt. In response, people have been on our side have been absolutely remarkably peaceful in just retaining police and retaining their peacefulness and calm and humour in the face of officers who were using truncheons earlier. It's been really very remarkable.
Okay. And how long do you reckon this is going to go on for?
That I have no idea. We just seem to have reached a standoff. There is a senior police officer here who just seems, as far as I can work out, to be throwing his weight around and not backing down. It's just going to be, well, who backs down first? I really can't quite see how this is going to resolve itself, short of them pulling out the riot cops in response to people who are blatantly and being peaceful and have now been very well filmed being peaceful. So the police have got to make their decisions from there.
Alright, you're standing on top of a van surrounded by riot cops. What's going on?
Well, it's quite peaceful here. They tried to come on site, it was absolutely ridiculous, and now we're stopping them from taking this. It's the least abandoned vehicle in Britain. They're being absolutely stupid.
How many cops do you reckon there are?
I'm not sure. There's quite a lot of riot police milling around to police this dangerous riot of people sitting about and singing. So
you're here for the day, do you reckon?
I'm on top of this van until they bugger off, basically.
Behind the red van, in front of a line of riot police, people have started telling their story of why they came to climate camp.
I'm an environmental scientist, and, you know, when I started studying, I thought, you know, save poor fluffy creatures that might be extinct and whatnot. And then over the past few years, you know, you suddenly... you look around and you see what's going on, and you see climate change is the greatest environmental threat, you know, for a million years. And you say, hang on, we know what the problem is, you know, we know what the science is, we know what's causing it, we know what we have to do about it, and we're not doing it. And it just, and it boggles the mind. And you stop and you look and you say, hang on, politicians just don't have the bollocks to do what really has to be done. Big business just wants to keep making more money. This is complete insanity. And, you know, I don't know what the police here think of. You know, even if we manage to close down King's North for a day, that's not going to make any difference to the economy or anything. It won't really disrupt life anywhere. It's, you know, it's a symbolic act, and it's a really, really important one. And it's just extremely symbolic that when we come here and we try to raise our voices in non-violent way, this is what we're confronted with, you know, a wall of police, which is really unfortunate. I mean, we're doing this for you, for your children, not just for ourselves. I'm sorry if my voice is shaky. I don't feel more passionate about anything else in my life, really. So, yes, thank you. That's why I'm here.
Somebody on the Radio 4 the other day was trying to put an argument for King's North, and they said something which a lot of people would have nodded in agreement with, and it was, we need a new power station that uses coal to meet our energy needs. To meet our energy needs. Not, we should reduce our energy use. It's not about need, it's about greed and want. And if we're the generation of greed, then our grandchildren are going to spit on our graves. That's why I'm here.
Camp Radio, I was just sort of getting an update because it's 8 o'clock in the morning and the rear gates, obviously there's loads of riot police over here. Can you explain a little bit what's been happening at the front gate?
I don't know, I got woken up, I don't know, it's about 4:45 or something like that. They're just telling people to come down here and try and help protect the gate. There's a little bit of shoving, but generally it's not been too bad here, you know. They've not given a reason of why they're here. They've not really... Well, they said for safety, but since they've been here, obviously safety's gone down, hasn't it, you know?
Have they tried to get on?
A little, but not really. Nothing really heavy, you know. I mean, once the bins are in place, they've kind of just stood there, and it's been like this for a good hour or more now.
Right, so there's a whole barricade of bins front of us, and someone's just tying rope around them now to secure them.
Yeah, so. I mean, some of the guys got to the front and had a bit of tarp to just block them off whilst the bins got put in place, and there was a little bit of shoving then. But
I came down to check the front gate. So there's a group of people holding the front gate against the bands that were trying to come in the front gate, but they were getting a bit bored, morale was a bit low. I was asked to bring some music, so I brought some music down, and
it's like it's done the trick.
It's done the trick. It took about a fortune.
Hey, I'm from Climate Camp Radio. I was just wondering if you could give us a bit of an update about what's happening.
I'm busy, sorry.
Okay.
He said for our own personal safety check we're all alright. I'm paraphrasing, mind, because I can't remember what he says.
Yeah, just describe what went on the last few minutes.
Okay.
You've got a high view.
Yeah. I'm sitting on the red van, which is not abandoned, our red van from the caravan. Over the past few minutes we've had some really aggressive action. Really quick estimate, I'd guess there's about 130 riot police here, maybe 40 soft tops. In the past 5 minutes, maybe 10 minutes ago, about 30 riot police kind of moved past our front line onto the field, and were surrounded by campers. And then they were hitting us. And then after about 5 minutes of that, they kind of calmly walked back behind their front line. So at the moment, everyone's a bit calmer. We're just waiting to see what happens next. But it's quite a tense situation.
Do you know if there's been direct communications about what they're trying to achieve? Have they told the front line of what they're trying to do here?
Yeah, good question. I really don't think there has been. Tim from the bike trailer man, he suggested that the police use his microphone to communicate with everybody, but they haven't taken that up. But that's a good idea. But no, we're trying to work out what their aim is. I'm really confused because, to be honest, the riot police, and for most of today, they could have easily stormed the site, but they didn't. So I'm really questioning what is their aim.
Hi. Well, we just heard like what was happening earlier this morning with the police trying to get on site. So we've got Robert with us, who's been there for most of the day. He's going to give us an up-to-date report. So, hi, Rob.
Hi there. How's it going? Yeah, I'm pretty tired, like everyone else. I've been up since five, you know. But I've just come back from the back gate there. Police are still on site. This is not a police-free camp yet. So there are still around 70 to 80 people trying to hold the line up there. There's lots of workshops going on sort of in the area as well to sort of provide a bit of backup. There's about 50 police that are standing on the line as well, but there's a lot more parked outside the gate. There's about 30 vehicles, in fact. So it's like a bit of a police car park up there. So who knows how the situation is going to develop as time goes on. But As I say, it is a bit of a standoff at the moment. The police are looking pretty bored, but at least they're calm. And when I got up there was a bit of a party, you know, people were dancing around and listening to the music. Yeah, yeah. Right. But I think some people felt that maybe we should be taking the situation a little bit more seriously. You know, but people have been there all day since 5 o'clock this morning. There's a lot of people that are quite tired because of that, and they're really asking for backup now, so that they can go away and, you know, get fed, get refreshments and things like that. So if people are listening, it would be really good if they could head up to the gate if they're on site. What else is there to say, really? People are sort of looking for some kind of strategy moving forward, because it is a total stalemate up there. We've got 4 vehicles sort of parked up there, trying to block that road, because that road is one of the key access points to the site. And so we basically want to stop them from being able to get along there, because they've, as I say, they've got 30 vehicles parked up, and who knows what sort of...
They haven't got any information about what they're up to. Are they still trying to take the van? Is that them claiming that as their main goal still?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's still their claimed reason for being there. I think it's gone so beyond that now that it's becoming quite pedantic. It feels like they almost want the van as a bit of a trophy. Yeah. They don't really care about it.
They can cut the front off and stick it on a wall.
But for us, it is quite strategically placed to stop that there. So behind that, there is a bit of a barricade that's been built. People have transported rocks from the sort of surrounding area and put loads of rocks along the road.
Excellent.
Sensible.
Yeah, yeah. So people are responding, but as I say, it would be really good if more people could get up.
Definitely.
There.
We need to get, yeah. So if anyone's listening to this and you're not doing anything for an hour, go and take a cup of tea, go and sit up there, relieve someone, because, you know, they're keeping the cops off. So, I think we should all do our little bit to... keep that going, because it's hard out there. It's tough facing all those police, and they're all wearing riot gear as well, so it's not pleasant. So let's go and give them some cheer.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and we'll hopefully see how the situation develops as time goes on, because it could be that later on they do try something and they do try and get on site. So,
exactly.
So
it's going to get dark as well.
Yeah, exactly. And as I gather, there are some kind of meetings going on, spokes council meetings, to try and
figure
out.
Yeah, I was
going to
say, do you have any info about how people
can
sort of tap into the decision making process on this current situation?
Well, the camp itself has an emergency spokes council that is able to form in these types of situations. I know that there was a call out to get people to come and talk about that, but as of yet, I don't have any information about if they're forming a response to what's going on. So we'll see about that. We can keep you informed.
Okay.
What are the bins for? They're going to the camp.
Yeah, these ones are being used so we can stick all our stuff in them.
Mm-hmm. Get it up there,
and then they need to be returned somehow or other.
So they're just like trolleys that you get at an airport.
Yes, but they look to everybody else like we do.
I'll get a bin to help my friends. So at airports you get trolleys, climate camp, you get a wheelie bin.
This is for the Climate Camp Radio. You've just got here. How do you feel?
I feel wonderful. I feel really wet and annoyed at the police, but I'm glad I'm finally here.
And what are you riding?
I'm riding the Cutty Carbon. Made it all the way from Heathrow.
What do they look like? As is radio.
Oh, it's a giant ship on a four-wheeled, pedaled contraption made of cardboard and sheets and a nice big pirate flag on top.
Have you been on the caravan all the way?
All the way from Heathrow.
How did it feel to be here?
Wet.
How was the caravan?
It was fantastic.
Yeah?
It was everything you could have imagined it to be.
That sounds really good.
It was great. It was sunny all the way. Until now! And the police held us just long enough for it to drench us with God's kiss.
And do you think it did what it needed to do?
Yeah, we did a lot of outreach. We did bike powered film nights the whole way there, and flyered more people than you would possibly imagine. And we've had a really good response generally. And on Wednesday we did some actions in the City of London. Lots of people visited the advertisers for Shell, E.ON, various other nasty companies trying to greenwash their way out of the climate crisis. So that was fun, as penguins. We crossed London Bridge as penguins twice, blockaded traffic, caused an hour and a half gridlock apparently. And some of us went down to a council meeting which was to do with whether or not City Airport in London would be allowed to expand or not. And thanks to our presence, of course, they deferred the decision, which is better than saying they were going to do it. So, yeah, we had a good time. We visited Oxley's Wood on Thursday, where there was a victorious campaigning in the roads movement, which is like an incredibly historic place to be. And just happened we were there exactly 15 years to the day since the victory rally was held in Oxley's Wood. So we feel very special.
Just coming up that hill, hearing all the cheers, getting here how we said we would, nothing went wrong, everything went fantastically. The pirate ship is still alive, it's all really, really, really good. Even the polar bear made it. Yeah, we're just really happy to finally be here, and feels like it's been so worthwhile coming all this way, definitely.
Like, add to that.
Just seconding the impressiveness of Cuddy Carbon, the ship, making it up, making it through the rainstorms along the way, and we thought maybe we should all jump in the ship and like just sail down the hill through the police and straight up to the camp, but we made it anyway. We made it our way.
And how was the police reception of you guys along the way?
The last bit was probably the hardest as regards police, because they decided they wanted to be in charge and we were doing much better than them, and they messed it up, or tried to, but we didn't let them, we stayed strong.
Our traffic control skills were definitely much better than theirs were.
Definitely, that was exactly it, yeah.
Putting a lot more people in danger than we were, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, they nearly squashed two of the blockers earlier, so not very impressive, really. I think, yeah, collectively we did a better job than they ever could do.
Well, I guess that's to be expected, isn't it, really?
Yeah, but, definitely.
Hello, you've just got here on the caravan. How does it feel?
I feel utterly gorgeously lovely.
Yeah?
What a beautiful welcome. It was, like, worth every single step.
And you're a bit musical. Do you want to sing something about it quickly?
I want to sing, step by step, the longest march can be won. Many stones to form an arch, singly none. And with union shall we build. What will I make up that line? And E.ON comes crumbling to the ground every time. Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Speaking to you live from the camp, my name's a Carbon Town Crier, and these lovely people here have asked me in to do a couple of tunes. And I was the voice that was last on that report from the caravan. How weird that is. Total coincidence. This camp is full of beauty and synchronicity. And actually, in about an hour's time here at the camp, we are going to, us the caravan, that is, that, as you know, marched across town, the blighted Carbon Town, or blessed Carbon Town, are going to present a kind of hour snapshot of our caravan, and it's going to be the most beautifully chaotic piece of theatre ever experienced by anybody in a marquee. So, in aid of that, I thought we should, the theory going on the caravan was to write a song, a new song every night, and perform it. And I wrote about four half-minute songs. How's that going? I wrote about four songs, half of them. Oh, yeah. And here's one of them. There were a lot of buses passing us on this caravan, and many, many bus drivers would wave to us as we headed towards Kent. And there was a number 96 bus full of people heading to the Blue Water Shopping Centre. Now, that's got to be a place that I never want to experience. And you can win special prizes on the caravan for managing to pop a leaflet through those tiny little windows at the side of buses. And we were in the town of, now let me see, I think it was Bexley Heath. And I think there was a statue of William Morris there. And we went into the shopping centre. And we were thrown out because you can't sing about penguins in a shopping centre, especially if you're not going to buy anything. And we noticed that there was a statue to William Morris there, and this is a song that kind of popped out at that moment, with possible extemporization to deal with the current moment and the current situation. It's been a long and highly adrenalized day. Here we go.
Bear in mind that on this caravan we had four kids, and sitting on trailers, round and round and round, beautiful kids, just getting on with their thing in the trailers, foraging for fruit, climbing everything that they could possibly find. Sometimes you walk past them and think, they need a song, you know, they need a song. Not that they actually join in with this damn song, but that's the kind of genesis. Maybe I should start. And the wheels on the caravan go round and round. And the wheels on the bus go round and round and round. And the wheels on the pirate ship go round and round. And the wheels on the pirate ship go round and round. Yes, and the wheels on the bike blockers, they go round and round and round and round. We're gonna turn the world upside. Turn it upside. What am I gonna do? That's what we did for 7 days, walking from Sipson all the way to King's North. Gonna see what springs forth, and now I am here in the field, and I can see it's beautiful, more than I could ever expect. That's right. And I used to say on the road, on the way here, well, hello to the people on the number 96 bus, yeah. Well, thanks for knowing that it ain't about me. It's about us. Yes, you know, it's about us, it's about us. It's about us, it's about us, it's about us. And we're gonna break the laws like bread, the laws like bread. We shall break the laws like bread. Break the laws like bread. Break the laws like bread. And we're slipping into in the song some of the things that we sang at the gate from 5:30 this morning, yeah. And we're gonna break the laws like bread and hold the line. We held the line. People didn't hold the line. Yeah. We held the line. Children don't get weary. Children don't get weary. Campers don't won't you get weary. Oh, that's okay. I'm sitting down in front of a riot cop. He's put his knee in my balls twice. I don't know what's on his mind. I'm trying to talk him round. But here I am and here they are. They're bringing me a cup of tea. Here's some chocolate, here's some tea, here's some caffeine. My God, I'm buzzing like a crazy thing. Ooh, that's okay. Here's some porridge. That's gonna ground me just a little longer. That's what I did, and then I was a lucky man. We took him off the site, and then I went to bed. I went to bed, and I had such an exciting afternoon. Maybe that's where this song is lacking in some drama, so I'll bring it to an end. And thank you, people, for showing that our solidarity will prevail. Ooh, yes.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
So, I'm going to hand over to this marvellous gentleman here who was also with us on the mic this morning.
Very kind.
Yeah, sure.
Thanks a lot, Mark. Yeah, as you were saying, man, we were there from 5:30 this morning, trying to keep the police out of camp, and there was a lot of tension early on, and then the sun kind of came out, and people started to relax and start to share their experiences and start to pass the megaphone around and start to explain why they were there, why they're here at the camp, and to break things up a little bit, the good man that just performed there. Start to entertain the people, man. Start to captivate the coppers and the people, man. And the atmosphere just completely flipped, and it was quite overwhelming, man. And you know, did a little bit of poetry, and it was a beautiful, beautiful day. So, if people are cool, I'm just gonna share a verse I performed earlier on. Okay, I need to stand up then so I can breathe. My name's Simon, by the way, to everybody listening. Simon, you don't need to know my surname. Right. Sawasi. Sweatshops, black blocks, riot cops and capital. Corporate killers, death squads, Iraqis, plus the parables. All of the village wept, watching ads saying have it all. A chorus of the oppressed screaming the personal's political. The baby sits to learn from daddy degrading them. You're making the madness who blames a bitch for burning the pastor, raising a fist to a working a faster. The slave and the master, it is the pastor, preacher paints. The plaster cracks, the chapel crumbles. Rebels run to reach the gates. A man with the guns becoming a saviour as the money corrupts the saints. So I sit and I wonder about the thunder plus the rainbows. The hunt of either prey bones breaking as the pain blows. Punters out of the maze of consumption as the plain-clothed undercover agents are coming across the same blokes. It seems to me that we be victims of the same jokes. We're holding up a system that's designed to keep the paid broke. That's why I'm chatting about the A's ode. Thank you. Thank you very much.
It was extraordinary this morning. You know, we heard testimonies from people and we moved from talking about our politics to what was in our hearts, about what was breaking our hearts, really, about what the hell's going on and about how our hearts are kind of being a little bit healed by being in this field. That sounds like the beginning of a song that hasn't been written yet. Okay. Well, I'll get on to that. Maybe I'll come and sing it to you at the end of the week. So I've got a guitar here and it says many things on it. One of it says, let's walk together whatever the weather come what may, and it also says, soul not coal, and just transition. I'm sure there are people talking about just transition some other parts of the station. One of the things that it was a bit of a slogan that came out a bit early this morning. I would love to see a banner, I haven't had a chance to make it. Soul power, not coal power, that's my kind of message. Except, you know, I'm not exactly James Brown, but there you go. If James was around and on the planet, I'm sure he'd be here right now. What's that? And if he was white. Well, yeah, that's an interesting point, yeah. That's an interesting point. We're not an exclusively white brethren, very fortunately. So this is a song called Soul Not Coal, and sang this earlier this morning as well. It's about... goes and comes in about 5 minutes. Can you cope with that? Okay. Oh, there we go. The mighty Mr. Simon is holding the microphone up to the big hole in the guitar. What a fine fella he is. Talent and dedication. Unless you need to pay for your dinner, that is. When I say heaven, I don't mean perfection. I think I mean sisterhood, brotherhood, neighborhood. I think we'd go there if we could. Yeah, we could. Some say heaven's above. Well, I say heaven's below. But the seeds down there that need our tears to grow. And let's walk together. Whatever. Here comes. We're gonna walk it anyway, anyway, anyway. and melt through those police lines and make the yeah. Some say heaven's above, well, I say heaven's below, but the seeds down there that need I grow. Oh yeah. Next year will be the 10th anniversary of the June the 18th day of action all around the world against global capital. A big carnival against capital in the city of London. Do you remember when we reclaimed the streets? Oh yeah. Tears were still there. So are you ready to cry? Ooh, are you? Take some soul to block that King's North car, and it could take its toll. Is renewable. And it's not for rent. No. Ooh, and it's not too bad. So put your fossil fuels away, they ain't tender anywhere. Oh yeah. Some say heaven's above, well, I say heaven's below. But there's seeds down there that need our tears to grow. Oh yeah, you gotta grow now, yeah. Do you remember when we reclaim the streets? Oh yeah. Tears will still melt the cold. So are you ready? Are you ready? Every woman, every man, join the caravan of love. Everybody take a stand, join the caravan of love. I'm your brother, yeah. I'm your brother, don't you know? She's my sister. She's my sister, don't you know? So are you ready? Are you ready? Are you ready to cry? Oh, you're ready. Thank you, boys and girls of the radio. What? All good?
Yeah. Have you got time for this?
Yeah. All right, then. I won't keep you long at all. Right, this is a little couple of verses called One for All, All for One, because that's what it's about, really. This is what this whole anarchy business is about, as far as I'm concerned, man. Just people looking out for each other, do you know what I'm saying? Helping each other out. So it goes like this. One for all for one, stepping down from the sound of their drum to live for the crowd, come and embrace a life the sun blazes upon. Grip the mic on this stage and look on to the haze of the future. The clarity of past truth grew to refute the fallacies attached to what I knew. It's truly beautiful. I'm making plans, tripping on misunderstandings, yet I'm raising my hand.
In every step there's a lesson, a quest for perfection that is destined to never be met. The net loosens, I groove to the music, listen to my soul, let the mood lift, move with it. I choose living to a positive rhythm, yet I consider our democracy honestly illegitimate, as policies are written for the richest of our citizens, and everybody's watching bombs dropping on the innocent like boom. But as I face the sky, the equilibrium begins to create a united diversity of kin. Embracing life, the sun blazes within. By gripping the mic, climbing this stage, I'm looking to live. And let live as we're debating our positions. I'll be sitting in the wisdom of the rain. My decision feels grateful. The pain helped shape how I make sense of what I'm bringing to this table of living. We break up, forgive, make love when we assist. We take and give, cooperating to exist. Human nature's a complicated kettle of fish. But in the name of our liberty, I'm raising a fist. Together we can chase a different way. Make decisions that break chains. Envision a safe place to live without the sound of their drums. Without the sound of their drums, together we can chase a different way, make decisions that break chains, envision a safe place to live. Without the sound of their drums, without the sound of their drums. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for listening.
Stick with us, yeah. We've got hopefully some barrel breakers coming in to talk to us in a few minutes, so we're just gonna keep it lively with a couple of tunes for now. So,
talk to later. Thank you.
Hey. Yeah, we're back, and that was a track. I don't know what it was, but it was good, wasn't it? So, how? Yeah. So, how's your day been, Patrick?
Very stressful and long.
Yeah, hasn't it? Remember the part of the day when there was a tent on top of our tent? That was hilarious. We were having a meeting, and all of a sudden the wind was blowing pretty hard, right? And it just blew the tent next to us on top of our tent, but we didn't know what it was, so we were looking through the top, and we saw this huge shadow, like, towering over us. We were like, oh, what's that? And then we realized, like, oh, that's a tent. Massive tent. A marquee. Sorry. That's the technical term. Marquee. So, yeah, I think that's it for tonight's show. Unfortunately, we're not going to get one of the bail breakers on the show tonight, but we'll have them on tomorrow. And we are going to be broadcasting again tomorrow at 1 p.m., so definitely tune in for that. And if you're interested in getting involved in the radio, we desperately need help. Well, not really, but we could use some help. And it's really fun. Like, we've got recording equipment that we could lend to people to go out and do interviews. You can come and present something, come play music, spoken word, anything that you can think of that would be interesting for any listeners out there. Just come and get involved and find us in the radio tent, which is right near the Be the Media tent. Just ask anybody in the Be the Media tent where we are, and they'll be able to point you in the right direction.